Blog Talk Radio.
Now, in its second edition, Carol Dean's popular book, The Art of Film Funding, has 12 new chapters to cover all areas of film financing and how to avoid expensive pitfalls. Learn how to start with an idea and end with a trailer. How to make an ask for money. Create your story structure and your trailer. Legal advice, fair use, successful crowdfunding, how to ask for music rights, and what insurance you can't shoot without. Available on Amazon under Carol Dean and at FromTheHeartProductions.com. Hi, and welcome to The Art of Film Funding. I'm your co-host, Claire Papin, along with Carol Dean, author of the best-selling book, The Art of Film Funding. Carol is also the founder and president of From the Heart Productions and the host of this show. Our guest is Orem Miller. He provides healthy home and office evaluations for clients nationwide who have electromagnetic sensitivities, as well as those who just want a healthier home. Orem also consults on the healthy design and construction of new and remodeled homes. And he writes extensively on the health hazards of EMFs, and I'm sure they're going to tell you exactly what EMF means later on in the conversation. And you can visit his website to learn more about Orem as well. It is createhealthyhomes.com. And I'm sure we'll be giving that out again later as well. Carol, you had Orem evaluate your home, right?
Yes, I did, Claire. That's why I want to do this show, because I have found that by making some small changes, I increased my energy over 100%. I was just toast by 5 o'clock, and I am so much healthier since I worked with Orem. So thank you for joining us, Orem.
You're welcome, Carol. Thank you, Claire, as well.
Now, the thing that I want to get across to you, Orem, is that filmmakers are surrounded by EMFs, electromagnetic frequencies, on a daily basis, and they really need to know what they are and how EMFs affect your body, your mood, and especially your energy. And I understand that you are a certified building biologist environmental consultant. So let's start with, what does that mean, Orem?
Well, a building biology environmental consultant, or BBEC, is someone who is trained and certified by the International Institute for Biobiology and Ecology, headquartered in Clearwater, Florida, although our executive director, Michael Kahn, lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. The profession was founded 27 years ago by Helmut Zia, a German architect who took training in the biobiology knowledge in Germany before that time, maybe 30 years ago. And he brought that knowledge to England, tried for a year to get people interested there, really didn't have much success. So a year later, he moved to America and met his wife, American wife in Florida, and started the International Institute for Biobiology and Ecology here in the United States. We just celebrated our 25th anniversary 2 years ago at a conference that we held. I was the chairman of the planning committee, and we put together a DVD, a video documentary honoring Helmut, and presented it to him and to his wife, Susanna. And he had had a stroke 4 years before, so he had retired as executive director. And then he made it that far to October of 2012, and then passed away 6 months or 3 months later. So we were very grateful that he could join us, and we could honor him for that. So the word Bau is the German word for building, and Biologie is their German, or their pronunciation of our word biology. What this profession focuses on is the health effects of the living environment or the built environment for people who live and work within it. So we always they always consider, building biologists consider the housing envelope to be your third skin. Your skin is your first, your clothing is your second skin, and then the building that protects you from the elements and from the outer world is your third skin. There are all sorts of sources of toxicity potentially within that envelope, and that's what we focus on.
Okay. So now, let's start with EMFs, what they are, and where they're found in someone's home.
Okay. Now, I will answer that, but first let me say that we are trained in all facets of toxicities of buildings. So to become certified as a building biologist, you take training in not only EMFs, which I'll go into in great detail for the rest of the hour, but also training in indoor air quality. So that would include mold assessment and mitigation, and also assessment and mitigation of chemical outgassing from fabrics and upholstery and carpeting, paints, finishes, stains, glues, and such. And then other possible toxins such as carbon monoxide, asbestos, lead, radon, and those different aspects. And then we also have training in natural building materials. I actually co-wrote a book with two other gentlemen who are also building biologists called Breathing Walls. And it's a self-published book, 350 pages, which goes into great detail on how to choose materials and design paradigms and protocols that avoid mold. It, by not sealing up the house, which is what the green building movement does in order to provide sustainability and energy efficiency, but rather to allow to keep the air, the warm air in and the cool air out. You know, it's energy efficient, but our building envelope protocols allow the inevitable moisture that gets into the wall cavity to escape through diffusion through our building envelope materials in such a way that it reduces the relative humidity below the 65% that promotes mold growth within that 36-hour window that you have before mold grows to the stage where it produces these toxic byproducts in the air. So it's a whole science in and of itself that dovetails with building science, but we differ in some important means. They want to, quote, build tight, ventilate right. That's the motto of the modern green building movement. But it's fraught with problems, and Austin, Texas was the first municipality in the country to legislate building or vapor barriers, in their case, to keep cool air in and hot air out. And they were the first city to outlaw vapor barriers because of all the problems that developed with mold in the walls. So our motto instead, we have a different approach in our book, Breathing Walls, and that's available through breathingwalls.com, is different. It's not build tight, ventilate right. It's make the envelope waterproof so that rainwater doesn't get in, but vapor permeable so that moisture that's in vapor form can get out from the wall cavity and it stays dry. Even here in Southern California, where we live, I'm based in Los Angeles, we still have mold here as well. So that aspect is covered in our profession, and anyone who's a building biology environmental consultant is trained and certified in those aspects as well. Now, electromagnetic fields actually stands for, or EMF stands for electromagnetic fields. There are frequencies that are generated by various devices, and they generate fields. They call fields in the air. At varying distances from the source, depending on the field, and these have different frequencies. So it's not the case that 1 meter measures all EMFs, and it's not the case that one mitigation strategy handles all EMFs. There are 4 types of EMFs, and I will go through them now, and they have to be identified with separate meters, and they have to be mitigated with different strategies. So the first is electric fields from house wiring at 60 cycles per second or 60 hertz. The second is magnetic fields from house wiring at 60 cycles per second. The third is the general category of radio frequencies, and that's all the wireless devices, which is probably going to be the bulk of our conversation today. And the fourth is these harmonics that are affectionately or called dirty electricity, because it causes distortion of the smooth 60-cycle-per-second sine wave on an oscilloscope by adding harmonic frequencies at higher frequency levels above and beyond the 60 cycles, depending on whatever the fundamental frequency is. And I'll go into that in some detail, because that would be relevant to your listeners' work in the film and broadcast industry. So I can go into more detail.
Yes, great. Let me just say that I was referred to you by Sabine, who is making a film called Zapped, and that was the first time that I really was introduced to this information. And when you came out and I began talking to you the first visit, you've been to my house twice now, and both times have been very fruitful.
Thank you.
But
I'm glad for your sake.
Oh, yes, it's been wonderful. The first thing I did was stop using the walk-around cell phone for hours at a time.
Uh-huh.
And that I went back to the old cord. I have a long cord on my phone. And the energy, the additional energy that I had from dealing with that cord was nothing compared to the way that the mass from working on even a new cell phone in the house, a walk-around cell phone, they contain a lot of electromagnetic frequencies, and when you're on them for a long period of time, they really take your energy. So,
well, for some, yes, I'm going to talk about that.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing, a good place to start.
Okay. So before we do, let me just briefly say that 90% of my work is with residential situations where I'm asked to come into people's homes, and I also do evaluations long distance. I mean, I actually don't do the physical evaluation. I guide people to do it for themselves. So if someone calls me from Kansas, then I talk with them for 3 hours on the phone to introduce them to all of this, and I go through the same information that I do with an on-site evaluation of a home, where that lasts 5, 6, 7 hours for a home. And the first hour is spent going over at the kitchen table, the dining room table, what EMFs are, the four types that we recognize, where they come from in the home, how they affect human health, and what we do about them. And that takes an hour and a half, and once that's done, the people who I've just spoken to have more knowledge about electromagnetic fields and their effects on human health than electricians, physicians, even, with all due respect, a lot of EMF activists. And I say that because there's a lot of good work being done, and we're right in there with them, on people who are battling smart meters, who are educating citizens about, people about cell phones, earthing pads, dirty electricity with the Stetcher filters, and these chips and pendants. That's the basic knowledge that most people have from the Internet. What they don't know, all of these people, those who are the activists and those who read their knowledge and watch the YouTube videos, they're not. That's only part of the story. There are these other electromagnetic fields that come from house wiring, electric fields and magnetic fields. Now, most everyone knows about magnetic fields, and that's what everyone calls EMFs. And I have people who say, well, now that you've checked the radio frequencies with your radio frequency detector, let's go check the EMFs. And I correct them, because they're thinking about the magnetic fields now from the house wiring. And I gently and respectfully correct them in their understanding so that they understand that all of these are EMFs, because they all are comprised of an electric field component and a magnetic field component, which are at right angles to each other from any source of electricity, man-made electricity. Even natural magnetic and electric fields from the Earth and from cosmic radiation from the sun and visible light, they're all analog sine waves of electric fields and magnetic fields, which are at right angles to each other. When humans started to harness electricity and develop it through turbines and, that whole history with Thomas Edison and Tesla, Tesla is actually credited with inventing alternating current, which means going from positive to negative in the phases of the sine wave. Edison had us at DC, 120 volts DC, when he deployed electricity in Brooklyn and then everywhere else in the world. But they had to have little coal-fired power plants every few blocks because the electricity on DC didn't go very far without declining in voltage, so your lights were dimmer just two blocks down the street from the coal-fired plant in Brooklyn than the light posts that were right next to the plant. So Tesla came along and told Edison about alternating current, which Edison did eventually adopt, and that's what we have today worldwide, with 60 cycles per second at 120 volts in North America and South America, and 240 volts and 50 cycles per second over in Europe and Asia and Africa, the rest of the world. So there are fields in both cases, and what you have when you have electricity flowing through a wire is a field, a magnetic flux field around it, that goes in a particular direction. The electrons go clockwise, if you look from behind, in the direction of the flow of current, and the protons go counterclockwise. And the return current on the neutral, because it's a two-way street, you have to have current going out on the hot to the load, which is your motor or your light bulb, and back on the neutral, so you have a loop, and the magnetic field around the neutral is coming back at you, so it's the reverse. The electrons go counterclockwise. And so when you put those two circuits, those two components of the circuit together, which is true today in modern circuits in your walls, and you just look at a lamp cord. It has two wires, and there are two plugs that you plug into the outlet. One is the hot, the other one is the neutral. So those are side by side in everywhere in the house, or they should be. And if they are, and if the current is equal on both, then you're going to have cancellation of those two fields, and you don't have a net current or net magnetic field coming into the room when you turn on the light. So when you get your Gauss meter, and there are many on the market, and I have a page on my website at www.createhealthyhomes.com, all one word, homes is plural, createhealthyhomes.com. If you click on the EMF meters and instruments link on the left, and you see the same menu on the left with every page, you'll see my suggested list of meters and instruments that you can buy, depending on your budget, affordable to expensive, to measure these different fields. And there are pros and cons with each of them, and I go over that in the article. So you can get a Gauss meter, and you can measure the magnetic fields, and you won't have any when you turn on your lights and different appliances standing a foot or two away from the wall. If you put the Gauss meter right on top of the wire, you will have a field. Or right in front of the outlet, you will have a field because there's separation of those wires in that outlet. But you move that Gauss meter just 2-3 inches away, and it drops to the low level of the room. Now, if you do have magnetic fields in your room, you have to start moving that meter around, and that's exactly what I tell my clients who are out of state, to do when I guide them in their home evaluation after that first talk. So, we talk about these different fields, give them an introduction, I tell them what meters to buy, and then a few days later, when they have received the meters in the mail, I then go through another couple of hours introducing them how to use them, and they start taking measurements, and they give me the data. Now, if I go to a home here in Southern California, I will do that myself, and I move the meter around, and if I get the same reading, if it's elevated all over the room, I know I have a power line outside the window or outside the house, and I do. That's the pattern for that. If you have elevated fields but you move your Gauss meter to the floor and it gets higher, and then you walk 3 feet over to the right or to the left and it goes down, then you've got a problem under your floor, and it could be current on a water pipe. It could be a wiring error where you have an unbalanced load where the current on the neutral is less than the current on the hot because some of that current is siphoned off on another path to get back to the breaker panel because the neutrals from two different circuits are tied together where they shouldn't be. It's a violation of national code, but it happens very frequently. Or a neutral and ground are connected together. So we see those in about a third of the houses we go to. The electricians are not as careful as they should be, at least not the people who work with them in some cases. They're taught not to do this, but they do it anyway. It's a shortcut, and it's not caught, with all due respect to the electrical inspectors. They're not looking for them. The lights work. There's not really any significant danger, although the reason the code is there to not do it is not for health, I have to say. It's to avoid the very rare potential fire and overheating that can occur. Anyway, okay. So that's...
The most important thing I want to get across to people early on in the show is how beneficial it is to your health in general to understand that they exist and where they exist. And so I didn't know about things in the floor. That's
well,
very
you didn't have that at your house. That's why.
No,
I
we did have it at my house. It was that I had a lot of things plugged in next to my computer, which I still do. But I moved the computer itself 3 feet away. It was a short move, and I also moved all my extension cards with it, and that knocked down the amount of EMFs that I was getting on my right foot because my foot went numb from the accumulation of the electromagnetic frequencies at my desk.
Well, you had all four EMFs at that desk, and more so in particular locations. You had magnetic fields from the transformer and the motor. The hard drive motor, which is another source of magnetic fields that I was going to mention, is these point sources. You had that near your feet. You had, another client that I just worked with a couple of days ago. She has to move her laptop back because her knees are right underneath the laptop, and there's a magnetic field. Everyone needs to know this. There's a magnetic field that comes out of a laptop where you have the spinning hard drive motor in that laptop. And there's a field around every electric motor that comes out 5 or 6 inches in all directions. And it's very difficult to shield that. There is something called the Hara pad from lessemf.com in upstate New York that blocks it somewhat, but not completely. I've measured, it's better, but it's not completely gone. It just reduces the extension of that field downwards. But without it, it goes right through the whatever surface you put it on. It doesn't matter. It's very difficult to block magnetic fields. So she has to move that laptop back. Some people put it over to the side, and then they get extension cables to an external monitor, a flat-screen monitor, and an external keyboard and an external mouse, which should not be wireless, which we'll get into. So, and then you had electric fields, which I want to talk about next, from the cords that you just mentioned. And then you had radio frequencies from the Wi-Fi, and then you had dirty electricity from the switch mode power supply in the computer. So, yeah, you can have all four magnetic field or EMFs at a computer station.
Yes, and it was really a very simple fix. It was understanding what existed, that what seemed so simple and what normal, it was normal in everyone's house you go to. They've got an and all these things plugged in. But what I didn't know was the number one, how that improved my health when I moved it. And then number two, you had me disconnect the lamp behind me because of the cord, which I want you to get into, how the cord was exuding more EMFs behind me as I was totally surrounded. So I have overcome that one and how to rewire lamps to make them work. So maybe we can get into some of that now.
Well, and if you don't mind, I'd like to take one step back and introduce something here that does come up a lot. You called me, Sabine Debricourt or Jemayel, that's her maiden name that she's going by for the film. She's doing a wonderful job with that film, and I am in that, along with colleagues of mine and researchers that she's spoken to, and she's continuing to get footage for that documentary. It's going to be a very good one. And she's doing a crowdsourcing thing for that, and we need to give out the website for that before the show is over. I'll look for that while we can, while we're speaking. But anyway, you called me because you were concerned about the smart meter on your neighbor's wall, 20 feet away, which you can see through your window, and you had aluminum foil up on the window, and you were very concerned about that because of what we hear from Northern California. All the people up in Northern and Central California in the Pacific and Gas and Electric service area have these new smart meters, and they were the first or one of the first electric utilities to implement them on people's houses like 3 or so years ago. And because of the very strong signals from those and the number of beacon signals that are sent out per minute for these smart meters to talk to each other, a lot of people got ill, not the majority, but a certain minority, a certain percentage, a large percentage, became symptomatic when these things were put on their homes. So because of that, there was a lot of pushback against PG&E and the California Public Utilities Commission, which in the winter and spring 2 years ago implemented an opt-out option for all customers of the three regulated utilities in California. That would be Pacific Gas and Electric, PG&E, Southern California Edison, down here around us in Southern California, around L.A., and San Diego Gas and Electric. And so you can opt out for a monthly fee, one-time $75 fee and then $10 a month, and it's less if you are on a fixed income, to opt out for your home. That's possible, and then no questions asked. Now, LADWP, Department of Water and Power here in Los Angeles, has a similar provision. They actually don't have many smart meters, and they don't have they can't afford to roll out the whole program, we were told at a meeting.
The story of the smart meter in Oxnard, I called. I heard it was coming. I've been reading a lot about the illness in Canada and UK and in Europe. And so I was very concerned. I did not want one on my house. So I sent a letter to Con Edison saying... Southern California Edison.
Yeah, Con Edison in New York.
My New York office at the moment. And so I made a copy of some of the complaints abroad, put it in the letter, and said, you will not put one on, or I'll sue you. And let me finish.
You can't sue them. It's their meter. You agree to... Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
3 days later, two men in suits appeared at my front door. I said, Ms. Dean, we're in receipt of your letter, and we want to talk to you. I said, I don't want that meter. No problem, they said. Let's walk around. Show me where your meter is. And I did. And they put a little tag, a wired on a little tag that said, do not install the smart meter. So I was so pleased that thank you very much. That was the end of that. However, about 6 weeks later, I had another employee from the electric company come by and knock on the door and say, I just wanted to make sure that your meter is marked, that you do not want something installed. So I walked him around saying, well, we put a thing on there together, and I certainly haven't removed it, but... Orem, it was gone. So the guy took out some plastics, self-adhesive labels, and plastered them all over it, saying, do not remove, do not remove. So we don't know who took that off. It could have been the installers, who I guess they get paid for every place they install. But there's no way that the wind could have taken that off, and there's nobody has access to that yard but me. So nevertheless... I did opt out, but the man next door to me didn't, and his meter was 20 feet from where I sleep. So that's why I was very concerned about it.
Right. So, and by the way, I should say that this whole legal action aspect is a sticky wicket, and there are people who are launching a class action lawsuit. I know some of the details about that, and I'll just leave it that. It's all up in the air, and it's a big headache, let's just put it that way. And it needs to be resolved. We don't need these meters. Italy uses they ban smart meters. They use the copper pair for telephone lines. The UK has put a one-year moratorium on smart meter deployment, and there's a utility in Arizona that's having second thoughts about deploying it because of all the headaches that PG&E is going through in here in California. So, so the whole thing is a real mess, and a lot of people are being bothered by them. However, here in Southern California, which is what I'm about to say is applicable for your listeners to this show and the podcast who live in Southern California, not Central California or the rest of the country, we happen to have the Itron brand smart meter down here in Southern California, which is different than the Landis+Gyr and GE models that are used by Pacific Gas and Electric. And when I heard a forum by smart meter activists from Northern California who came down to Glendale a year and a half ago, who said the same thing down here that they do up there, which is true, that smart meters are now known to be 50 to 100 times more powerful than cell phones, I was sitting in the audience, and I'd started to measure the Itron brand meters that smart meters that Edison was putting in, and I thought, well, that's not what I'm getting with my meter, my radio frequency detector, and what's wrong with this picture? So as you know, Carol, for whatever reason, Itron chose to use a lower power density for their beacon signal. Now, it is very high once a night at midnight when they do send their data, but these beacon signals, which are bothering everybody all over the country and world, that are transmitted multiple times a minute, like every few seconds, if not right in succession, and I measured, it's on my smart meter page on my website, createhealthyhomes.com. I went to Central California, where and I evaluated a PG&E meter because someone called me near San Luis Obispo, and I said, I normally don't travel 4 hours for a job. I'll do it by phone. But I said, are you in PG&E territory? And she said, yes. I said, I'll be there tomorrow or in a couple of days. And I had an opportunity to evaluate several smart meters there because I wanted to see for myself just how strong they were. And they were incredibly strong. They maxed out my meter at 2 to 3 feet because I measure at 3 feet and 8 feet. And at 8 feet, they were 54,000 microwatts per meter squared. Well, they're no higher than 8 to 15,000 microwatts per meter squared at 3 feet for the Itron brands down here. And at 8 feet, they're 300 to 1,000. Now, that doesn't mean they're not harmful. We should scrap the whole technology, and there are people who are bothered by smart meters, even here in Southern California, with the Itron brand. But so I'm not saying that they're safe. I'm just saying that they're less, you know, it's like, so you're smoking half a pack a day instead of a pack a day, okay? It's still not good, but the point I want to make here, which is relevant to your house and for everyone else who's listening here, you called me up because of concern about the smart meter. It turns out the amount of radiation, or it's not ionizing radiation, but the amount of the field, the strength of the frequencies coming into your bedroom, was at a certain level, and I can even tell you.
It wasn't bad. But the most important thing is, for people in L.A., how do they find out if they have this this type that has the lower output?
Do they
the meter?
Pardon me?
Is the name on the meter?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
They want to see if the meter is named what?
Well, you'll see the word Itron at the bottom of the meter.
Okay.
I-T-R-O-N. Now, it's a little confusing, Carol, because in DWP territory for Los Angeles, which is a municipal power company, not under the regulation of the California Public Utilities Commission, because it's not a regulated utility, it's a municipal utility. So they can do what they want. But every municipal utility in California also has a smart or an opt-out program of in some fashion or other. They're not all the same. Some of them are more expensive and restrictive in Glendale and Burbank, and we won't get into that. And DWP doesn't have smart meters everywhere. There are many homes that still have the old analog meters because they don't have the money to roll it out like Edison did, which is a for-profit company that surrounds Los Angeles. Okay, so in L.A., you will see Itron meters, but they're not smart meters. They're digital meters, but they only send out a signal when the guy drives by in a truck and presses a button on a device in his hand, and then it triggers a signal. It sends out a signal to trigger a transmission back to the, you know, out into the air from the digital meter, called an ERT model, that sends a month's worth of data that's been accumulating for the month, and then the guy has it in his device in his truck or in his hand when he walks by. And then he goes to the next one, and at the end of the day, he downloads that information, and that's how you get your meter read. It's not digital, or not analog anymore with the spinning dials. There is a study program that was instituted a year ago with JPL and the Department of Energy and USC, and they have a few scattered smart meters around, and the whole city of Northridge is the only place in the LADWP area that has a smart meter mesh, where the smart meters talk to each other. But the other meters are digital, and they don't put out the frequencies, or if they do, it's very, very low and confined within a foot or so. So it's not so much of a problem in Los Angeles, Department of Water and Power territory. But if you're in Edison territory, you've got a smart meter, and it's putting out frequencies, but only twice a minute, and the frequency, or the, excuse me, the power density is lower than the ones up north, the other brands. And here's the important point. the power density of the radio transmission at 3 feet from an Itron brand smart meter, because you had an Edison, you have that at your house in Oxnard, is lower or equal to the power density from devices that we all have in our homes that are also not good for us. The cordless phone base unit, the Wi-Fi router, those are two main ones, and your iPad and your laptop and your cell phone.
Okay, well, let's focus on these things that, because people really understand what these things are. What happened to me was that all day I was sitting with my foot getting cooked with EMS from the computer and all the wires. Then
right.
At night, I would lay down on my couch and my foot was getting cooked again because I had the router at the bottom of the end of my couch was the
That's
router,
right.
Was storing off something like 5,000 units or whatever.
Yep.
And we moved that, and that was very successful.
Yes.
So
we took a diversion here to explain to your listeners why you called me in the first place. And this happens all the time, Carol. People call me up because of one thing, and it turns out that in the case of smart meters, it's not as much of a problem as it is for all those people who live up north who are much more ill, many more of them. Now, there are some people, again, who are bothered by smart meters here. They're not a good technology, but it's what brings me to the house, and then I say to you on the phone, I did this to you, I said, let's see what the numbers actually are, but it's probably likely that you have other EMFs in your home that you don't know about, and let's take a look at all of them. So that's what we did. So let's talk about that now. You brought that question up 10 minutes ago. So at your desk, you had indeed several EMFs. You had magnetic field exposure from the transformer, transformers, there were multiples of them, several of them plugged into your surge protector, as well as the hard drive from the motor of your tower, your central processing unit, you know, on the floor there, all behind your desk. You know, it was like a foot behind your desk, and all this stuff was back there. And I measured with my Gauss meter in the front of the desk, under where your feet would go, and that was very high. People also have that from these uninterrupted power supplies or battery backups, the UPS brand battery backups that you have next to your feet. In case your power goes out, you still have 4 hours of power for your computer. Those have a huge magnetic field, and so does the base unit of your stereo system for your sound system for your computer. All those things need to be moved 2 or 3 feet at least away from your legs and feet. Same thing for the surge protector that has that nest of transformers plugged into it. Each of those has anywhere from 6 inches to a foot to 2 feet of magnetic field around them too. And everyone should get a Gauss meter. You can buy one for $35. It's a single-axis Gauss Master model from lessemf.com. Or the F.W. Bell model for $80, which is digital instead of analog, but the needle. Anyway, or you can get a triple-axis meter like the Tri-Field for $150, or better yet, the data logging Gauss meter for $200. That's triple-axis, and it doesn't matter which way you orient the meter. If it's triple-axis, you get the same number. But with single-axis, you have to be careful to move it in three different directions wherever you measure, because if you don't, you'll miss the magnetic field. So that was there, and all you have to do, the solution for that, for the magnetic field at your computer, is to move those things away, and then you'll be good, two, three feet away from your body, including anything with a hard drive motor. And by the way, I just found out yesterday that there are many or new models on the market now that don't have a hard drive. It's all digital. It's all flash drive for their microprocessor. So they should have much less magnetic fields, and you may be able to put them on your lap. I have to measure one. We'll see.
Great. Just so tell me again, because I'm looking for a new computer. So what would I be looking for?
You want to they're not cheap. They haven't come down in price yet, but they're the newer models, and they're not fast either. And they don't have the storage capacity that they're 256 megs for their RAM, but as opposed to a terabyte, you know, with the traditional models that we have. But and I can't guarantee that there's no magnetic field. I'm just saying it should be less because it's not a hard drive motor. It's a flash drive. I just learned this yesterday. or 2 days ago at a client's house. Some engineers, some geeks there were saying, this is the new thing. I said, oh, that's very interesting. And he looked it up. It has a flash drive in it as opposed to a traditional spinning hard drive motor. And we could talk about that, Carol. So then that's one thing. Now, the electric fields are a separate issue. And let me explain them to your listeners. Basically, magnetic fields come from the current, from current flowing down the wire, and then the electric fields come from the voltage, which is the pressure behind that current, like the pressure of a garden hose. When you turn on the spigot, you have pressure up to the nozzle at the other end, and then you have the flow coming out when you squeeze the nozzle, which is like turning on the light. When you squeeze that nozzle, then the flow of water comes out, but only because the pressure is there because you opened up the spigot, which is like turning on the breaker panel. So now the pressure is there and the flow is there when you squeeze that nozzle. When you let that nozzle go, there's no flow anymore, but the pressure is still there right up to your hand. Everyone's had that experience. When you let go of that nozzle, that kick is still there in your hand. Same thing when you turn the light off. The voltage is still there in that light, that lamp cord up to that switch, if it's at the top of the lamp, right beneath the light bulb. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And in the daytime, we can tolerate exposure to electric fields, except in your case, it wasn't good. I'll get into that in a second. But particularly at night, when we sleep and go through the four stages of sleep every 90 minutes, and we make our melatonin, our pineal gland releases the melatonin that it's been making throughout the day. It's released at night into the bloodstream. Well, all that gets hampered or lessened or decreased in the presence of this agitating field, which comes out from the circuits in your wall, if they're plastic, and most of them are in the country, and from the cords you plug in, even if there's no current flow. If the light is off, there's no current flow. And electricians have argued with me, and I say, well, you're right, there's no current, but there's voltage. And I prove it to them, and they know, and they don't realize it's a health implication. But here's what the health implication is. The voltage field comes out 6 feet from every unshielded wire, which includes the Romex plastic jacketed wires in your walls, right through the sheetrock, and the cords you plug in your room. Now, you can get shielded cord. And everyone in New York City has metal clad wiring, and also Chicago by code, not for health, but for other reasons. And there's no electric fields that come into the room. And here in Los Angeles, in Southern California, they used metal clad wire, including the house I'm in now, that I live in, here in L.A., built in the 50s, because of earthquake protection. Not for health, but you can't drive a nail through it so easily like you can with a plastic circuit. So there, and earthquake protection here in Southern California. Not by code, just that was the practice. Not done now, but it was in the 50s and 60s. So half the homes in L.A. and Orange County have metal clad wiring, which is great. But for those who have who plug in cords, everyone has a problem. And if you have plastic wiring, you have this. And what you have is the field comes 6 feet out from the plastic cords you plug in and from the Romex plastic wiring in the wall. And if you're laying there at night in bed, and you're obviously in that six-foot field, and it doesn't matter whether your head is at one end or the other, your whole body is like an antenna. It's absorbing the voltage, and that field causes the electrons and protons, which are charged, to alternately be attracted and repulsed from the wire at 60 times a second, or actually 120 times a second, because every cycle has two phases, a positive and a negative phase. So there's this constant agitation all night long, and that's what was bothering you. You were getting it in the daytime because you sit at your computer 8 hours a day, you told me, and you were absorbing all that voltage, and it was causing this agitation. If you are aware of Ayurveda, it would be called vata vitiation. So you know, those of us who know about Ayurveda would say you're vatted out, and it's just an agitation. You feel absolutely drained. You feel weary, and that's also true, by the way. I don't want to forget this. If your laptop has a two-pronged plug, or if it's an Apple, a Mac, and you pull that cord off from the transformer, that white box, and you slide on that little adapter with the two prongs that stick out and plug the transformer into the outlet or into the surge protector to get rid of a cord, that's not good. The cord needs to be there on the Mac because it's grounded at the other end. And with a PC, you have a 50-50 chance that your plug is going to be three-prong versus two-prong. If it's three-pronged, chances are it's going to ground the computer, and then you'll be fine. And also, if you have an ungrounded plug, two-pronged for your laptop, but your printer has a three-prong plug and you're connected between the two with a USB cable, then you're grounded at your computer. But if you don't have those situations, you can put your hand on the computer and you have, you know, 20 to 40,000 millivolts instead of, you know, less than a, just a few hundred. And that causes people to be really tired after an hour at their computer. So that's another situation. Anyway, so with these cords at night,
okay, well, yes, thank you for that information about computers. We really appreciate that. Well, what is so wonderful is that in my bedroom, I can hit the switch at the door and turn off all of my plugs so that there is no electricity waiting at the gate when you plug something in. You taught me that, and with that, I sleep wonderful.
Yeah, but see, the difference in your house, which is a little unique for your listeners, is you have metal wiring in your bedroom. I see that in the notes now, and that's why you could do that, because what you were doing was you were shutting off the power to the outlets by your bed, because that happened to be the switched outlet that was controlled. It was very lucky for you in that regard. Usually it's not as simple as that. But
well, it was excellent.
Off,
and the other
well,
thing
in your
that
case,
helped,
yes, because what it meant
was the fact that put oil on my windows, and you found a very high Wi-Fi coming from the house next door, so that it was coming into my house all night.
Yeah, that I'll get to that in just a second. So for the electric fields, we were able to get those low in your bedroom because you didn't have any fields coming out of the cords that were plugged in to that outlet that was switched. I made sure that you plugged your lamp into the outlet that was switched, because one half is switched, the other one's not. You have to be careful
right
about that. But you have metal wiring. In homes that have Romex, they have to shut off a couple of breakers, and I identify that for them, or over the phone we can do that. That's a whole different situation. But then at the computer, Carol, we move the cords because the cords put out this voltage up to 6 feet, and so I had to reduce that exposure for you since you spend so much time there. And so what we do at computers is we find the 120-volt cords that bring voltage to appliances like your lamp, like your paper shredder, your adding machine, and so on, and, of course, to your computer. Now, if you have a PC a desktop computer or tower, you can take the cord, unplug it from the back of the computer, and take it to Radio Shack and say, I need another one like this, but shield it. And the part number is 21-206. That's the part number for a shielded replacement. And they make it. I say, why do you make this? To prevent a interference with your sound system if a guy drives by with a CB radio. It's not for health. But you can replace that with a shielded cord. You can't do that with a Mac. They have their own proprietary cords. But that's just another example. And all this is on my website, by the way, createhealthyhomes.com, under safer use of computers and all these different articles that I have. So that's the electric field. Now, let's talk about radio frequencies in the remaining time. The radio frequencies come out of these transmitters. Even when you turn off your computer, the Wi-Fi router at your desk or in your kitchen or in your den or in your bedroom, which shouldn't be there, is pumping out frequencies all the time, even on standby. Same thing with your cordless phone base unit. You hang up the call, you hit off, and put your handset in the charging cradle of your base unit that has the cord that plugs into the telephone jack or into the Vonage or UMA or Magic Jack at your computer or into your router, and that doesn't mean that the transmission is over. The base unit continues to pump out frequencies. I liken that to an ashtray full of three or four burning lit cigarettes filling the room with smoke.
Wow.
And that's what most people have. Now, if you have a producer or a director, and you're on set, and you have you're plugged in, you're wired in. You have performers. You see these packs on the back on their backs or on their belt. They have two of them in case one goes down for their microphones. And they're starting to get ill through their back from the transmissions from these devices. these cell phones, these iPads, these tablets, whatever brand they are, they all send out frequencies intermittently. So the laptops are intermittent, cell phones are intermittent, but the cordless phone base unit and the cordless phone handset is continuous, and the Wi-Fi router is continuous in its transmission. So you have to think of this like cigarettes. If you have to ask yourself, how many cigarettes am I willing to smoke on a daily basis? That's where we're at with this right now. And it is the case from an epidemiological standpoint. The researchers have shown, you can go on my website and get links to all of this, that everyone is harmed on a cellular level with all of these technologies at close range over time. The safety limits are only based on heating effects from the experiments that were done in the 1950s, and it turns out that that is not the whole story. They completely ignored and did not look for the health effects at much lower levels that cause biological effects on a cellular level in terms of metabolism and DNA, for that matter. When DNA unfurls, it's like a fractal antenna, and it's very susceptible to these frequencies, even at low levels, and that's when transcription errors occur and you get mutations. So for all of these reasons, you want to maintain good practices for your health, good diet, and so on, to protect you, because just like with cigarettes, back in the 50s and 60s, if we had a conversation with a 17-year-old in 1957 and and he's smoking a pack a day, and I'd say, I come from your future, and in 1985 you're going to die from lung cancer. And he'll say, what's the problem? Look around you. Everyone's smoking. There's no problem. And we're told that these things are safe. And I can, even if you're right, I can stop anytime, or it won't happen to me. Well, we're at that point now, but we haven't hit the critical tipping point. Although in Europe, it's very interesting. I'll bet most of your listeners do not know that that governments in the following countries have either taken Wi-Fi out of schools or are in the process of doing so: France, Germany, Switzerland, Belgium, Austria, Israel, India, Russia, and Australia. Now, what do they know that we don't know? Well, for one thing, they pay for the health care of their people. We don't. And so it's in their economic interest to pay attention to what is now turning out to be the fourth health crisis in 60 years. They've been through this before. They've seen this movie before. They've seen this script. And the script says, thousands and millions, tens and hundreds of thousands of people, millions of people succumb to this, and many thousands die from these asbestos and smoking tobacco. The third one would be lead in gasoline, and now we have the wireless technologies. So on my website, I have links to a committee resolution 1815 from the Council of Europe, which is recommending that they put in place awareness-raising campaigns, reduce the safe exposure levels, find new technologies using light and others. There's a company that's putting out not Wi-Fi, but Li-Fi, which is light-based transmission, and it's from Russia, and it's in place in some companies now, where they have this unit on the ceiling, and then they can get to these satellite units with line-of-sight infrared. It's four times faster than Wi-Fi, and there's no radiation. It can't be hacked. So that's, in the pipeline. So
wonderful.
You need to educate yourself about this and just say to yourself, how many cigarettes am I willing to smoke on a daily basis? And learn about these other types of EMFs that also exist in your home that you don't know about, and get them taken care of. Because in your case, Carol, when you got to the time for sleep, you really weren't getting that much exposure in your bedroom. You were getting more where you worked in your you were much closer to the levels of radio frequency exposure were much higher in your living room at your desk and the couch right next to it, because you had transmission from your laptop, you had transmission from the router, which is at the foot of your couch under the TV, and they were much higher than anything you get through the wall or window from your neighbor. But you had electric fields where you slept just from the cords, and you had electric fields in the daytime too. So it was a simple matter to get these levels down at night for what you had there, and the shielding on the windows did help, and the stucco that we have here in Southern California does help to lower the frequencies coming in through the wall. Not true elsewhere in the country if they have vinyl or wood siding, but But there are shielding strategies that we have from SEMF or Safe Living Technologies in Canada. But all of these things need to be taken into consideration. But I kept thinking to myself, this is not adding up. This picture doesn't sound right, that your symptoms were as bad as they were with the levels that I was getting where you in your bedroom. But when you told me that you spent 8 hours a day at your desk, at the computer, with the levels that I found there, that caused an accumulation, like a filling up of your rain barrel of these toxic influences. And then even if you had nothing at night, no fields in your bedroom, you'd still have symptoms because you pushed yourself through. You're really a strong-willed person, and you weren't quite as symptomatic as others that I work with, that you could stay there at your desk, but it filled up. But when you stopped that activity and went and into the bedroom and at night to sleep, that's when it all came out and you started to feel these things that had accumulated during the day. That made sense to me. And that explained,
right.
You know, and when we focused on your desk, that's what made all the difference
for your experience
at night.
The melatonin, I have to say to you that I had begun taking melatonin and I needed it. When I looked at your list of products that Wi-Fi removes or reduces in your body, melatonin was one of them.
And electric fields do that even more so, to be honest with you. That's right. We make our own melatonin. We release it from our pineal gland, and that gets restored. If you go to my website, createhealthyhomes.com, and click on comments from clients, and you read these comments that came to me, have come to me over the years. I have more that I haven't had a chance to post. Where people all over California and all over the country who I've worked with are sleeping better, like yourself, and mostly in most cases it's because of reducing the electric field exposure. Carefully measuring it, figuring out which circuits cause it, and then shutting off those breakers, which is the case for most people. You're in an unusual situation where you have metal clad wiring. Most people don't. And so with the wireless, for your listeners, they really have to weigh how long do I want to be exposed, and how often, and am I willing to break with custom and go against the current tide and not be wireless with everything, because we're heading into what's called the Internet of Everything. The LA Times, covers and features the everything that comes out of the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas every January. Well, this year, the headlines every day were, we are now approaching what they call the Internet of Everything, because the transmitters and batteries are so miniature now, they're so small, and so miniaturized that they can be in everything, including your tennis racket, your toothbrush, and your baby's diaper. When your baby's diaper gets wet, it sends a text to your phone to tell you your baby's diaper's wet.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we are out of time, and I know that we're going to have you back. I hope you'll consider that in a few months. Because we will get enough questions to fill up the next show. But let me just say to you that what turned me on to the whole Wi-Fi thing was I went to an event with Cindy Sage,
yes,
who refused to go into this lovely home in Santa Barbara unless they turned off the Wi-Fi.
She would not be exposed to it. Some people are sensitive now. They're refugees. And I work with people who can't, they have to sleep in their car or move to the desert. They can't go to a coffee shop that has Wi-Fi, they get a headache within 10 minutes, and then they have to go sleep for the next day. So you have to go back to hardwired options. They're all on my website. Reduce use and increase distance. Those are the takeaways as far as all of these EMFs. And just be willing to think outside the box. And I say to my clients, if I do my job right, you two, the husband and wife, are going to have a serious conversation after I leave about going against the grain and going back to hardwired ways of connecting the telephone, corded telephones, not cordless, keeping your landline, not telling your friends and family to call your home number first instead of your cell phone, use your home number for outgoing calls when you're home, and not having, keeping hardwired connections for your television, your speakers, and for your internet, hardwired connections through the through Ethernet cables or through the electric circuits with network adapters, and then also and putting your iPad or your tablet in airplane mode when you put it in front of your kids. And I say to people, if you do this, 5 to 10 years from now, when everyone around you is getting tumors, you're going to say, we thank ourselves for listening to that guy in 2014 who warned us about this.
And, oh, that's fabulous, Aurum. Thank you. And I love your website. You were so generous with information. So,
Thanks, Claire.
I think, yeah, we really thank you for coming in. And I, filmmakers really appreciate this knowledge. Many thanks to you, Aurum, for the work
you're
you
welcome.
Do.
My pleasure.
Yes, and Carol, I'm so glad that you invited him on the show. This has been amazing. Going to share it with all my friends. Thank you, Aurum. Thank you, Carol.
You're welcome, Clara. Thanks
Take
so
care.
Much.
Be well, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
I want to remind our listeners that David Raiklin is a brilliant and talented award-winning musician who scores films and can compose music for a trio or for a full orchestra. David is a very good friend to the independent filmmaker and comes highly recommended by From the Heart Production. If you need music to help tell your story, please contact him at davidraiklin.com. That's David, RAIKLEN.com. And Carol and I want to thank you for tuning in to The Art of Film Funding. Please visit our website at FromTheHeartProductions.com. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good luck with your films, everyone.